Hello and welcome to Historical Hysteria. My name is Nicholas Ward. Do you smell that? That faint whiff of almonds? Congratulations, you have been poisoned. Now, what do you do? Well, today you probably drive to the hospital where they will pump your stomach, apply various antidotes suitable for whatever poison you happen to have consumed. In the past, you would not have been so lucky. Poison predates recorded history and has been used for everything from hunting to assassinations to medicine. As societies became larger, the influence and complexities of poisons and the poisoners grew. The ability to slip it into food or drink and slink away unseen was too tempting for the ruthless among the upper classes, and in some societies, poisons were distributed with wild abandon. In ancient Rome, for instance, poison was such a common weapon that poison makers gained celebrity-esque reputations. But with the growth of poisons came the growth in counter-poisons. The most reliable of these was the food taster, a lackey to taste your food before you ate it. During one period in the Middle Ages, it was said no one ate better than a food taster, as every morsel of food for the king would be torn apart and consumed by the lucky lackey, before being delivered cold and dismantled to the king or lord. Unfortunately, many poisonable people could not afford permanent food tasters, so turned to different ways to cure themselves. Today we are exploring the five strangest poison cure-alls in history, starting with number five, the Bezoar Stone. The Bezoar Stone was worth its weight in gold. Literally. It was a hard, blackish-green stone which, when swallowed, was supposed to absorb poisons from the body. From the Persian word for antidote, the stone spread like wildfire through Europe and into China. It was sometimes known as the Goa Stone from ones manufactured in Portuguese Goa. Many aristocrats would carry these stones religiously in small, ornate gold boxes on their persons at all times. Gold was thought to improve their usefulness. Some even made jewellery like rings and necklaces, just in case their enemies got a little too close. So, what mystical Eastern magic was the stone? Well, the stone was actually an undigested mass of food formed in the stomach of animals, usually goats and oxen. Yum. Fortunately for the cash-strapped, the Bezoar Stone could be used again and again, just sort of through your waste. Washed with a little warm water and bam! Perfectly reusable antidote. Did they work? No, of course they didn't. In 1567, Ambrose Paré tested the stone. A cook sentenced to death was given the option of death by hanging or poisoning with a small chance of recovery. He chose poisoning. The Bezoar was administered and he died in agony. Paré wrote afterwards, "I found the poor cook on all fours, going like an animal, his tongue out of his mouth, his eyes and his face flaming red. I made him drink about half a sextia of oil, thinking to save his life, but it was of no service. He died miserably, crying out he had better have died on the gallows." Despite this, Bezoar would continue in medical use until the 19th century, and unfortunately the legend is regaining steam today, possibly due to a study which found the poison could remove arsenic. Except later Cambridge studies found no one could replicate this in peer-reviewed research. Despite being literally undigested shit, Bezoar powders sell today as a new age cure-all for about $100 a gram. Which brings us to number four, pearls. For some reason, something about things being shiny just makes people want to eat them. Despite being basically shiny rocks, pearls have a history not just as a cure-all for poison, but a cure for death, going back thousands of years. In ancient China, various physicians would grind pearls to make a powder used for treating poisons. Another popular use was to dissolve pearls in a mild acid, or to weaken them so that they could be pulled apart like taffy and eaten like gum. These supposedly could make you live forever. If there are any ancient Chinese physicians still kicking around munching on their mollusk spit, well, please contact me at historicalhysteria@gmail.com. I would very much like to talk to you. On the plus side, pearls were largely harmless for humans, which is more than we can say for the next item on our list, number three, the Mithridate antidote, otherwise known as poison. Mithridates VI is famous for having spent his life consuming poison to build a tolerance before being defeated by the Romans and trying to poison himself to avoid capture and failing because of his tolerance. The story is probably a myth, and the modern popular story actually gets much of the older myth kind of wrong. Mithridates did reportedly spend much of his life consuming poison, but in service of discovering the Mithridates antidote, a cure-all for poison, which did contain a small amount of poison, it's thought. In 120 BC, Mithridates V was poisoned. His son, fearing being poisoned in favour of his brother's ascension to the throne, fled into the wilderness, where he lived for 7 years, before returning to be king. Mithridates spent much of his 7 years purposely poisoning himself, in an attempt to find a remedy and build a tolerance for being poisoned, and would, for the remainder of his life, consume his antidote daily. After his defeat at the hands of Pompey, he reportedly attempted suicide by poison, but was immune to the poison. Though these stories come from Roman histories written 2 centuries later, so... Now, whatever Mithridates' antidote was, he kept this a secret, and there are no records of what he used. After his death, the story of the antidote spread to Rome, where every unscrupulous doctor worth his salt began marketing Mithridates' antidote to the general public. Though you would think a bogus cure-all for poison would be exposed pretty quickly, Mithridates' antidote, later shortened to just Mithridates or Mithridatum, would be a popular cure-all right through until the 19th century, and would be used to treat everything from poisons to plagues. The most popular recipe included 45 ingredients, including some mild poisons, but one recipe contained over 70, and included several mild poisons as well. It was theriac, which is number 3 on our list. Now, this is a bit of a cheeky third item, as theriac was just a form of Mithridates' antidote, but tough luck, this is my podcast. Theriac was first made in the 1st century CE by Emperor Nero's personal physician Andromachus, claiming to have found secret notes containing the recipe of Mithridates' antidote and then improving on it. Theriac, as it would become known, would be different to Mithridates, containing initially 64 ingredients and then over 70 in some varieties, depending on who was making it. It would become so popular it would spread through Persia and into China. The key difference between theriac and Mithridates was the addition of animal flesh, theriac deriving from a Greek word meaning pertaining to animals. One of the main ingredients was snake flesh derived from vipers, as at the time people thought snakes contained a powerful antidote to avoid poisoning themselves. Other key ingredients included opium, hemp, and myrrh. Gee, I wonder if the addition of powerful narcotics had something to do with people's enthusiasm for this medicine. Theriac was extremely expensive and highly prized and would remain popular among apothecaries until the 19th century, which brings us to our number one on our list of weird and wacky cure-alls, unicorns. Nothing cures poison better than unicorns. In 1494, Thomas de Torquemada, the first Grand Inquisition of the Spanish Inquisition, tuckered out from all the torture and murder, retired to a monastery. According to a pro-inquisitorial biography written in the 16th century by Luis de Palma, people who knew Torquemada say he never sat down for a meal without a vial of powdered unicorn horn. Torquemada was instrumental in proposing, planning, and executing the Spanish Intifada, the mass expulsion of all Jews from Spain, and when many Jews said, "All right, well, we're Christian now," the mass persecution of crypto-Jews, who weren't Jews who were really into Bitcoin, but rather Christians secretly practicing Judaism. Having made many, many, many enemies, Torquemada was rightfully petrified of being poisoned, so turned to one of the most highly valued poison cures of all time. Unicorn horn. Unlike the other cure-alls I've listed today, the unicorn horn was extremely simple and unlikely to poison you. Take one unicorn horn, powder, consume with food or wine. Boom, you are cured of your poison. Anyway, that is the end of our episode and... Sorry, what's that? Unicorns don't exist. Huh. Then what? What were they eating? Up until the industrial era, belief in mythical beasts was pretty common, because how are you going to prove or disprove them? Unicorns have been reported since antiquity. The earliest depiction in artwork may be as far back as 2000 BC, and Greek and Roman naturalists wrote about unicorns not as stories and legends, but as factual, real animals. Most mythical creatures have a lot of skepticism about them, even during their time, but unicorns, even in their age, most mythical creatures have a lot of skepticism surrounding them, even back in the Middle Ages and antiquity, but unicorns were always treated as fact rather than fiction. Unicorns are mentioned in the Bible 9 times, mostly in the Old Testament Hebrew Bible. One of the earliest written records for unicorns comes from the 8th century book of Isaiah. Quote, "And the unicorns shall come down with them, and the bullocks with the bulls, and their land shall be soaked with blood." Anyway, not the point of the episode. Theories as to why so many were convinced of unicorns' existence often theorize it comes from descriptions of rhinoceros. Big, four legs, single horn, not a cow. For a lot of people, the only other frame of reference like that is something like a horse. The earliest reference to unicorn horn being a cure for all poisons comes from 400 BC, when a Greek physician, Photius, wrote, "Princes carried it to protect themselves from all poisons." The difficulty of securing unicorn horn, because, you know, they don't exist, meant only the richest of people could get them. During antiquity, unicorn horn was likely traders passing off whatever unusual horns they could get their hands on as unicorn horn. And during the Middle Ages, the narwhal tusk, for obvious reasons, became the go-to for the unicorn horn. It is where we get our modern depiction of unicorns with their long, straight, spiral horns from. And the trade made Norse fishermen a lot of money, and undoubtedly was a source of great amusement for them. The unicorn horn was thought to cure just about everything, because why not? If it didn't work, you just didn't have real unicorn, obviously. So, did the unicorn horn work? Well, our friend Ambrose Paré, after testing the Bezoar stones, decided to try out unicorn horn, and could find no effect from his numerous examples. Despite this, people ignored him, and unicorn horn would stay popular for another 100 years. The Danes would even construct a unicorn throne in 1671, made almost entirely from narwhal tusk. Unicorn horns. However, around the same time, the alicorn, another name for the unicorn horn, was discovered to be narwhal tusk, and the cure was finally put to bed, undoubtedly with the Danes fuming that their throne wasn't made from real unicorns. Of course, it's not like we've left the stupid days behind us. The current ivory and wildlife black market is worth an estimated $22 billion a year by the World Economic Forum, and much of that is fueled by idiots buying fake medicine from apothecaries. Say what you want about hippies using crystals to treat their auras, at least they aren't losers snorting rhino horn to cure their limp dicks. That is all we have time for today. Thank you for joining me. Feedback can be sent to historicalhysteria@gmail.com and check the socials r/historicalhysteria on Reddit and @manichistory on Twitter. And very exciting news, HH this week is running a $20 Amazon gift card giveaway. Just leave a review on Apple Podcasts or any host to allow reviews, screenshot it and send it in an email to historicalhysteria@gmail.com and you will be in the running to win a $20 Amazon gift card. And before I leave, let me leave you with this. The first known piece of modern mammoth ivory was sold in London in 1611, harvested in Siberia. Since 1611, mammoth ivory has continued to be used as an ivory substitute, recovered from fossil finds in Siberia, Canada, and America. Mammoth ivory isn't as expensive as you might expect, and a small piece sells for under $100. Thank you for joining me, and goodbye!